located in Millville, is open 7 days a week, providing new and used records and CDs. From metal to reggae, hip-hop to doo-wop, and all stops in between, Attic Records has honest releases and all the music you want. Family-owned and operated, Attic Records pays for quality used records and CDs with no collection too big or small. You can visit Attic Records today or call them at 412-821-8484 and get the music you need. If you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. This next song is a song I've been listening to a lot these days. It's by Patricia. It's called Consumer Recreation Services. I hope you're enjoying the show.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Welcome, everybody. I want to start today with another Republican senator who is saying something so uncontroversial. But it becomes controversial because of how radically authoritarian the Republican Party has become. But also, even though he's saying something true and uncontroversial, he's not our ally. He's not our friend. He's still a radical Republican senator. I know I'm being kind of cryptic in the introduction, but there's really three issues here. Issue number one is it's become controversial to say that Joe Biden really won. Issue number two is that former President Donald Trump continues to be triggered like a little boy anytime anybody tells the truth about the 2020 election. And issue number three is we should not be confused. These aren't our ally Republicans. They're radical Republicans who accept an uncontroversial fact. If a Republican said we need water to live, we wouldn't say they're our ally. We would say, no, we agree about something completely uncontroversial. And they are still radical Republicans. So let's get right into it so that you will understand what I'm talking about. Republican Senator Mike Round, he appeared on Sunday with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. And he said in very unambiguous terms that they lost the 2020 presidential election. This isn't news to you. It's not news to me, but there haven't been that many Republicans that speak this clearly. So let's take a listen to what Mike Rounds had to say. Here we go.
You heard Martha Raddatz's piece right there. What do you say? You voted to certify the election last year. You condemned the protests as an insurrection. What do you say to all those Republicans, all those veterans who believe the election was stolen, who've bought the falsehoods coming from former President Trump?
We looked, as a part of our due diligence, we looked at over 60 different accusations made in multiple states. While there were some irregularities, there were none of the irregularities which would have risen to the point where they would have changed the vote outcome in a single state. The election was fair as we've seen. We simply did not win the election as Republicans for the presidency. And moving forward, and that's the way we want to look at this, moving forward, we have to refocus once again on what it's going to take to win the presidency.
Right. Actually trying to convince people that it's in their best interests to vote for you.
And if we simply look back and tell our people don't vote because, you know, there's cheating going on, then we're going to put ourselves in a huge disadvantage. So moving forward, let's focus on what it takes to win those elections. We can do that, but we have to let people know that they can believe and they can have confidence that those elections are fair. And that is in every single state that we looked at.
So this is not controversial. This is a senator simply saying we lost. That's all that happened. There were not more irregularities than there typically are. They didn't affect results in even a single state. We lost, and we've got to figure out how to win. So number one is that's controversial among many Republicans at this point in time, roughly half of whom still believe the election wasn't really won by Joe Biden. This gets us to Donald Trump's response. This uncontroversial statement from a Republican, which it being controversial is part of the story, triggers the former president to no end. Within a few hours of this happening, very early yesterday after this statement came out on Sunday, Donald Trump puts out a statement, quote, Senator, he puts it in quotes, Senator Mike Rounds of the great state of South Dakota just went woke on the capital F fraudulent presidential election of 2020. No, he didn't. Woke. He just said, hey, they got more votes and therefore they won. He made a statement this weekend on ABC fake news that despite massive evidence to the contrary, including much of it pouring in from Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona, Michigan, Pennsylvania and other states, there's no evidence pouring in, guys. He found the election to be OK, just fine. Is he crazy or just stupid? The numbers are conclusive and the fraudulent and irregular votes are massive. That's untrue. The only reason he did this is because he got my endorsement easily and easily won his state in 2020. So now he thinks he has time. And those are the only ones, the weak, who will break away. Even though his election will not be coming up with for 5 years, I will never endorse this jerk again. It's rhinos like this. Remember, rhino means Republican in name only. It's a term they use to mean they have an R next to their name, but they're not really a Republican. There's a litmus test now for Trump. If you believe he really lost, you're not really a Republican. Trump writing, it's rhinos like this that are allowing the Democrats to destroy our nation. And then he goes on with the normal stuff. The radical left Democrats and rhinos like Senator Mike Rounds don't make it easy for our country to succeed. He's a weak and ineffective leader. And I hereby firmly pledge that he will never receive my endorsement again. So second part of the story is this is a former president, an adult by all technical measures, who is relegated to sandbox playground insults anytime somebody says something this uncontroversial. Now, the third part, and this is the really important part, is these people are not our friends. These people are not allies. Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, they recognize Joe Biden really won. Great. But you shouldn't get a pat on the back for that. That's just reality. It's like recognizing the sun rises and sets, you know, but they voted with Trump almost exclusively, Cheney and Kinzinger. And similarly, Mike Rounds is a radical Republican. He doesn't get any praise from us. We note that it's wild that him saying Biden won is out of step with the Republican Party. But this guy is no friend of ours. He was one of the 22 senators who signed a letter telling Trump to pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement. He supported, remember Scott Pruitt from the EPA, who was caught spending insane amounts of money on luxury travel for his family, like a completely beyond the pale. Mike Rounds stood by Scott Pruitt. Rounds opposed the First Step Act, which was one of the few OK things that Donald Trump actually did as president. He has voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act multiple times. He abstained from even voting on the creation of the panel to investigate what happened on January 6th. Mike Rounds is a radical. We don't like Mike Rounds. So we have to remember that when we say, wow, this guy's willing to accept an incontrovertible truth, we don't see him as a friend of the left because he's not. He's still a radical. I have another chapter for you in the MAGA revolt that is taking place. I told you last week that what used to be pro-Trump and anti-Trump clashes within the Republican Party have now become pro-Trump versus formerly pro-Trump elements of the Republican Party. And this is really, really good for the left because the left has very little going for it right now when it comes to national political office and campaigning, as I've told you before. There's this former Republican U.S. Senate candidate, Daniel McCarthy. And we played one clip of him last week. I'll play it in a bit, but I have a new clip of him. This is fascinating. This is not only a former MAGA guy. It's a former MAGA guy who has woken up to exactly the truth about Donald Trump. He's a fraud. He's a sham. and he's a liar. Now, mixed in with that, there's all sorts of lies that Daniel McCarthy still believes, but it's incredible how what we've known all along about Trump, this guy is now waking up to. Listen, read between the lines, right? I mean, you know, you have to understand this guy's still a radical right winger, but listen to the critique he levies about Donald Trump here.
So I want to get clear to all you people out there that are potentially watching this that are, you know, kind of haters in regards to, Trump's part of a master operation or some 4D chess or any of that nonsense. No, Trump is a fraud.
That's fascinating. For years, these MAGA people like this guy were, when Trump would seemingly do something harebrained, they would say, this guy is playing some version of 4D chess. He's got all the moves figured out in advance. And now Daniel McCarthy is like, there's no 4D chess. The guy is genuinely a fraud, and he's right.
You were frauded.
Yes.
And it's time to move on quickly.
I think the term is defrauded, but I mean, he's right. He's completely right. And the Republicans should move on quickly.
He's a sham, and it's time to expose him as a sham and move on. And potentially he should be held accountable like the rest of these criminals.
Yes.
That have perpetrated this fraud on the American people.
That's a MAGA, a MAGAT, I think sometimes people call them. He has woken up. You know, you talk about going woke. He has become woke to the sham and scam and fraud that is Donald Trump. And it's amazing that it took this long, but he's absolutely and completely right. I mean, there's just no way around it. Now, this is the clip from last week. And here you'll see the MAGA shine through because Daniel McCarthy dips in and out of statements that make sense and complete and utter lies. Remember this?
Hey, Donald Trump, this is Daniel McCarthy in Arizona. The world is waking up to your massive grift. Please stop with the smoke and mirrors with these audits. Stop with your fundraising.
Yes.
Stop establishment candidate endorsements.
True.
Stop pushing this gene therapy.
Now, there he goes off the rails. The vaccines are not gene therapy.
The sauce. I hear you're coming to Florence, Arizona for another one of your do-nothing rah-rah session rallies.
That's exactly what they are. They are do-nothing rah-rah rallies. He's completely right about that.
Well, I have an offer for you. I will give $1 million to the charity of your choice if you take 30 minutes of your stage time on January 15th and debate me or answer my questions even in front of your crowd. Think about all the things that you've done that you've not been held accountable for. You ushered in medical tyranny.
No, that's not true.
You exploded our national debt.
That is true.
You relinquished our sovereignty with the USMCA trade deal.
That is untrue.
You passed more gun laws than Obama did with fixed NICS.
Unclear.
You warned about election fraud, but yet you did nothing to prevent it, even after my team, months in advance, warned you after we were stolen from in the Senate primary. You gave up on therapeutics, and you pushed an experimental gene therapy.
Okay, anyway, so he didn't push experimental gene therapy or anything like that. And as I played for you last week, this guy uses a flamethrower to burn the MAGA hat. So listen, it's horrible that this is what we have to look at as signs of light. But this is really good for the left. It's not just pro and anti-Trump Republicans. It's formerly pro-Trump Republicans turning against Trump. We want this happening right now. Some Trumpists have abandoned Trump. Alex Jones is furious with Trump. Former MAGA guy Daniel McCarthy is furious. Trump is feuding with Mitch McConnell. And he's still attacking his own former vice president, Mike Pence. This is a good thing. And it will be very interesting to see the approach that Trump takes at this weekend's rally. We'll be live with it. Trump speaks at 9 p.m. East. We will be live at 8 p.m. East on all of our online platforms. And I hope that you'll join me. Send me your thoughts about this. Find me on Twitter at @dpacman and let me know what you think about Trump on former Trump violence. The David Pakman Show depends directly on the support of our viewers and listeners. Grab a membership at joinpakman.com. We have so much to cover. I won't even say more about membership. I have not talked about White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki's press briefings for a while. I've just been so busy with different elements of the show. I haven't been watching them. I haven't been covering them. But yesterday I did get an opportunity to see kind of what was going on. And the more things change, the more things stay the same. Both Jen Psaki and Fox News reporter Peter Doocy have had COVID. They are both back. And Peter Doocy is once again attempting these takedowns of Jen Psaki and of Biden policy on COVID. Now, there is no shortage of criticism of the United States both under Trump and under Biden when it comes to COVID policy. Missteps made under both without playing false equivalency. What Trump did is unconscionable in a completely different way than the way that Joe Biden has not been as good as he could have been when it comes to COVID policy. But Peter Ducey tries to, in order to score points against Jen Psaki, starts pushing anti-vax talking points like vaccinated people are getting it too, which, of course, is a very dangerous talking point in the abstract to promote, given the level of anti-vaccine sentiment in the United States, given the incredibly significant protection that vaccines provide against hospitalization and death. So let's just jump right in. And I think this is an example of Jen Psaki doing a pretty good job of refuting these toxic talking points.
And I understand that the science says that vaccines prevent death, but I'm triple vaxxed, still got COVID. You're triple vaxxed, still got COVID. Why is the president still referring to this as a pandemic of the unvaccinated?
And of course, the answer, we'll see what Jen Psaki says. The answer is it's disproportionately the unvaccinated who have to go to the hospital, who end up being intubated, and who end up dying. Even though now most of the country, by most, I don't mean 80, 90%, but 60-something percent, most of the country is vaccinated, it is still overwhelmingly the unvaccinated that are getting really sick. That's what it means. Okay, now let's listen to Jen Psaki.
Well, I think, Peter, there's a significant difference between, and you just experienced this, and not to expose your public health experience, but I can speak to mine as well. I had been triple vaxxed. I had minor symptoms. There is a huge difference between that and being unvaccinated. You are 17 times more likely to go to the hospital if you're not vaccinated, 20 times more likely to die. And those are significant, serious statistics. So yes, the impact for people who are unvaccinated is far more dire than those who are vaccinated.
Will the president update his language at some time to be more reflective of the fact that people who are triple vaccinated are catching and spreading COVID?
I think the president has said, as have we a number of times, that there will be breakthrough cases. There will be people who get COVID here at different media organizations, at companies around the world, around the country, who have been vaccinated. But there is a significant difference between being hospitalized or dying and being vaccinated with more mild symptoms.
So what you have to understand is that Peter Ducey is there to try to goad Jen Psaki into sound bites for the purposes of later airing them on Fox News and showing how great he did. The questions are dumb and they're bad questions by design because they're so stupid that the idea is fire up Jen Psaki so she says something emotional or looks bad in some way. He is not actually there to be a reporter and to bring information to people. His argument essentially is seatbelt laws haven't completely eliminated traffic deaths. And also, sometimes even when you're wearing a seatbelt, you can still get hurt in a car accident. That's basically the argument. And if you said that to most people, they would say that's a really stupid argument against seatbelts, isn't it? This is the most important of the three things that he kind of tries to pull. We'll look at a couple others in a moment. The unvaccinated in the U.S. are more likely to test positive. So you still do get protection against Omicron from being triple vaccinated, but it is so contagious and it's different enough from what the vaccines target that a lot of vaccinated people still ultimately test positive. But they are significantly less likely to end up in the hospital and significantly less likely to die. It's sort of like a false equivalency where he goes, listen, unvaccinated people get this and vaccinated people get this, so it's the same. Well, no, you have to actually look at the numbers and see what it is that we're talking about here. And the issue is they are coming to their conclusion first, which is we don't like the vaccine. We want to talk about being against it. Not Ducey personally, right? His shtick is I got it. But people are asking this question because he's doing it for the audience. They start with we don't want the vaccine, and then they work backwards from there. Then they also talked about COVID testing. I'll just show you a little bit of that.
Jen, I was home all last week isolating.
Welcome back.
Thank you. I was isolating with COVID after a positive test, like a lot of people watching, and a lot of time in front of the TV. I heard the president say—
Did you watch Fox the whole time or other things?
I have exhausted the full catalog of Guy Fieri content.
Oh, okay.
And obviously a lot of Fox. But I heard the president say, Google COVID test near me. So somebody isolating with COVID, I did that. And the appointments everywhere were completely jammed. So why is it that you guys were so unprepared for the need for testing after the holidays?
Well, Peter, I'm happy to see you back and well. I would second say that there has been a massive surge in cases, as you know, and we're a part of, in D.C. and New York. And there's been an unprecedented, and other parts of the country as well, there's been an unprecedented demand for tests. So what we have done over the course of the last few weeks, even before...
Okay, so, you know, it's another gotcha. And it is absolutely true that testing is a disaster in the United States. It's been a disaster for a long time. And the problem here is the continued attempt to give people who watch Fox fodder for justifying not only not getting vaccinated, not even looking for a test when they have symptoms. And then here's the last one. This one is on Sonia Sotomayor.
You guys have been very aggressive countering COVID misinformation. So what do you guys think about COVID misinformation coming from the Supreme Court?
It's kind of weird that he even talks like this. You know, it's like what do you guys think about it's sort of like the way you would talk. It's like the way a third grader would talk to the teacher when they have a joke, you know.
And Sonia Sotomayor's false claim that over 100,000 children are in serious condition, many on ventilators.
Well, I'm not going to speak to Supreme Court arguments or statements made in those arguments, but I will tell you that what is at stake here is our effort to protect health workers and, most importantly, protect patients.
Yeah. So, you know, again, it's not that it's invalid to touch on these issues, but it's all meaningless gotcha. You're not really informing anyone by asking the White House press secretary about a misstatement made by a Supreme Court justice. It's just optics and trying to goad responses, and Jen Psaki continuing to do a pretty good job of dealing with it. Hey, this is going to be a lesson for some of our younger viewers. Some of our younger viewers may be totally unfamiliar with or not super familiar with a woman named Sarah Palin, who was once the vice president. She was almost the vice president of the United States. Were it not for voters choosing Barack Obama over the late Senator John McCain in the 2008 presidential election, Sarah Palin could have been the first female vice president of the United States, and she would have been a horrible vice president because she's an incompetent clown. Now, she has resurfaced, and I am going to play an unbelievable video for you. She went on Fox News to weigh in on the AOC controversy. The AOC controversy is she is for, I'm trying to even understand the controversy. She's for COVID guidelines being followed and being enacted, but she went to Florida. And her partner didn't wear shoes. He wore flip-flops sitting outside at a restaurant. And then she got COVID. And there's been all sorts of wacky responses to her going to Florida and getting COVID. One of the things that she said, she being AOC, that I think came off as a little bit pompous, to be completely honest, is she says the Republicans criticizing her want to date her. And this is just so funny. Sarah Palin, we've covered her for so long because she ran in, you know, 2008. Sarah Palin loses the ability to communicate in English. She has these situations where she's like visibly struggling to use language to communicate anything of meaning. And it happened again. And she weirdly says that liberals want to pound the idea of sex into the minds of people. See if you can even follow what Sarah Palin is saying here. This is wild.
It amazes me, though, her and other liberals, socialists, even their ability to
what socialist is she talking about?
Reflect from what the issues truly are, and hear her obsession with at least suggestions of them. Always gender and sex, even it. I truly believe that there are enough Americans who get it and understand what her tactic is, and that is to deflect from what the real issues are. But take this issue, though, with her suggestion of dating. And
if you're wondering what she's talking about, everybody is. This is how Sarah Palin communicates. It's completely unclear what she's talking about. And here we get into pounding.
you know, attraction to someone and blaming her failures on that, that obsession with sex. Look how the liberals, Rachel, want to pound that into the public's head, that advertising who is attracted to who, what people do in their own, the privacy of their own bedrooms, all those things that have to do with.
It's really funny to hear Sarah Palin, who participated in an anti-gay campaign in 2008 as vice president, she, you know, on religious grounds, now saying others are talking about what people are doing in their private bedrooms. That's really funny.
Privacy and sex. The liberals, not the conservatives, are the one who pound after that. And obviously, it's a tactic so that she doesn't have to be held accountable. It sounds like
they just want to pound about sex and things in bedrooms. And this, we were used to this Sarah Palin for a long time. Complete word salads. And just as a little history lesson for our younger viewers, I'm going to play a clip for you of Sarah Palin. This is from 2014. Okay, this is how regularly incoherent she's always been. See if you can follow what she's saying here.
We believe, I thought fast food joints, don't you guys think that they're like of the devil or something? That's what liberals, you want to send those evil employees who would dare work at a fast food joint that you just don't believe in, thought you wanted to, I don't know, send them to purgatory or something.
What?
So they all go vegan and, wages and picket lines. I don't know. They're not often discussed in purgatory, are they? I don't know. Why are you even worried about fast food wages? Because
this has not been edited or doctored in any way. This is the original thing she said.
Well, we believe in America where minimum wage jobs, they're not lifetime gigs. They're stepping stones.
Okay. So then there's me from 2014. That is the Sarah Palin that we have been used to for a long time, visibly struggling to use the English language. And for our younger viewers, you can go to our YouTube channel and check out some of our older clips. It's probably time for her to disappear for another 8 years because these appearances are not going well. Make sure that you're following us on Instagram at David Pakman Show. We will have these clips there. If you have just been listening today, we'll take a quick break and be right back. Today, we're going to be speaking with Yanis Varoufakis, who is the former finance minister of Greece, professor of economics at the University of Athens, co-founder of the International Grassroots Movement, and also author of several books, including most recently Another Now, Dispatches from an Alternative Present. Great to have you today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
So to start with, the current pandemic, we've seen a number of different aspects of the global economy exposed by the pandemic, including the fragility of supply chains, the fragility of the sort of social welfare apparatus in many different countries when employees get sick and can't come to work. We've seen the world's debt increase significantly. When you think about the last 2 years and the pandemic's effect on the global economy, what are your big concerns and takeaways?
Well, there are many changes and disasters at the quantitative level. So things that were already bad got much, much worse. So if you were a precariously employed worker, your life became even more miserable than it was. Within our countries and between our countries, inequalities have skyrocketed. But that's a quantitative effect. We had these problems before. They've been magnified. If you think about it, the crisis which began in Wall Street in 2008 and caused the Fed, the European Central Bank, the central banks of the world to band together and start printing mountain ranges of money in order to support financial sectors, that what happened effectively in the first semester of 2009 under Obama, Gordon Brown in England and so on, was effectively states, central banks replaced private profit in order to refloat the financial sector. That caused huge inequalities. Those who were in the money markets never had it so good. Those who were not suffered a permanent stagnation. COVID-19 exacerbated that, turbocharged that. But we are now in the process of another major shock to the system, which is a qualitative shock, because between 2009 and 2020, the central banks have been stabilizing the financial markets in the way that I just described, right?
Yes.
In the way that we're all familiar with. But now they are between a rock and a hard place, the central banks. Why? Because they have zombified states and corporations. So my country, the government of my country, is completely zombified. It's totally bankrupt and relies on the Central Bank of Europe to keep printing money, to keep it afloat. To a large extent, you could even say that, to a lesser extent, but to a large extent, about the federal government of the United States. Your debt relies to a very large extent on the Fed's capacity and willingness to continue to roll it over. Same in England, the same thing in Japan to a large extent. But because of the disruption of the supply chains that you mentioned, and the fact that we now have serious cost push inflation, not demand pull, cost push inflation, that is putting them in a damned if they do, damned if they don't situation. Central banks, if they continue to refloat the financial markets, are going to be fueling inflation, which is creating significant political and social problems. If they stop doing that, then corporations and states that rely on this extending and pretending of their debt are going to go under. And this is going to be the qualitative effect that we are going to be remembering in 10, 20 years time regarding this period, this juncture.
So in the United States and in other countries, when you talk about deficit spending, sometimes there's two very different views. You have people on one side who say deficit spending is always bad. You have people on the other side who sometimes say deficit spending doesn't really matter if you never have to pay it back. And sometimes there's a more balanced view, or it sounds balanced, which is deficit spending can be okay if it's on economically stimulative programs that over the long term are good for the economy. Can you talk a little bit about what are the limits of some of these ideas in the context of inflation and the other things that you're talking about here?
Allow me to start by being a little bit cynical.
Please.
Nobody is against debt if it finances them. So the you know, even very conservative Republicans in 2008, when the bottom fell out of Wall Street, they went straight to the state, to Hank Paulson and to George W. Bush, and they said, give us money. You know, we don't care where you get it. Borrow it, print it. The very conservatives who were against deficit spending. Okay, cynicism aside.
Right.
Look, it's capitalism without debt is like Christianity without hell. It doesn't work.
Doesn't work, yeah.
So, of course, the nuanced position that you put forward right at the end is the sensible one. That if you use deficit spending, debt-fueled investment properly, correctly, sensibly, that is the obviously good thing to do. Now, the problem, however, is that it's now 13 years since 2008. And during those 13 years, just by saying this, it concentrates the mind. We've never had so much money floating around in the history of humanity. Never before. Humanity as a whole has been saving 30% of its income. Not so much the Americans and the Greeks, but the Chinese, the world generally, right? Corporations, look at Apple. They've got $200 billion saved. I mean, it's insane that a corporation should have savings. Corporations should have debts. They should be borrowing to invest. When Apple has $200 billion, you know, of stash, you know there's a problem with capitalism. So for, you know, 13 years now, we've had all this money slashing around. Okay, it's very inequitably distributed, but humanity in total, we have all this money. In comparison to the liquidity which is available, we've never had such low levels of investment. So, you know, if you go to Sierra Leone or to Greece, you know, countries that are poor and bankrupt, Sierra Leone more than Greece, but nevertheless, you know what I mean.
Yes. Right?
I mean, you're gonna. It makes perfect sense. It's not pleasant, but it makes perfect sense that investment is low. But when you look at countries like Germany, which is swimming in money, never in the history of Germany did Germany have so much money. And yet the level of investment in things that they need, like, you know, 5G, renewables, things that they actually need, they still use fax machines in their ministries. This is true. In the United States, infrastructure is dilapidated. You have huge quantities of money, very low levels of investment. And that has been the case now for 13 years. Now, you know what this means? It means that as a species, we failed to make use of available resources in order to generate our capacity to weather storms, economic storms, COVID, climate change, and so on. So now, to start worrying about debt is a bit too little, too late, in a sense. So to those who say, oh, but look at, you know, the Fed continues to print money and the federal government is running a huge deficit. Yeah, but you know what? You were not worried when Wall Street was creating gigantic quantities of private debt before 2008. That blew up the world, in fact, landed us where we are. So let's focus on the one thing that really matters, investment. Investment in things that human beings need. And I'm not talking about SUVs. I'm not talking about, you know, more airports. I'm talking about renewable energy. I'm talking about artificial intelligence that can actually help us rather than enslave us. I'm talking about social care. I'm talking about healthcare, education, the things that will make life for humans better on this planet and which will allow this planet to continue to allow us to exist on it in terms of climate change.
We might not know the answer to this yet, but how do countries where things are really a disaster get out of those situations? And I'll give you, so you mentioned Sierra Leone, you talked about Greece, which you have firsthand experience with. I'm from Argentina. Argentina now has had administration after administration of disastrous different types of policy, none of which has served the vast majority of the people, and the problems continue to get worse and worse. Do we know for sure yet in sort of the modern world that countries can truly get out of these disastrous situations? And if so, what are the types of paths out?
Oh, we certainly can. Because, you know, as I said before, it's not that we don't have the money or the resources. This is why we are a stupid species, because we are not impecunious. We have the resources. We have the money. The savings are there. We're just not putting it into use. I mean, think about it. Just for one second, David, if I may say this.
Please.
For the last 13 years, okay, in order to stimulate the economy, our central banks have been printing money. Let's not judge them for that. They've been printing money. The question is, what did they do with this?
Yes.
They gave it to Bank of America, to Deutsche Bank, right, to Barclays Bank. And what did these banks do? They looked at little people out there, medium-sized businesses, small businesses. They said, no, we're not going to trust them with the money. So they picked up the phone and they called Google, Apple, Volkswagen, Siemens, who already have money sitting there doing nothing. And they said to them, look, we'll give it to you for free. Because, you know, the commercial banks got it from the central banks at negative interest rates or next to nothing, right? So, you know, Apple said, okay, give it to me. I'm not going to invest it, because if I wanted to invest, I would have invested my own money. So they take the money and they go to the stock exchange and they buy back their own shares.
Right.
And shares prices go up. This is a complete waste. This is not creating things that humanity needs. So, yes, we can get out of it. Countries like the United States, like Germany and so on, should do what Roosevelt did in 1933 with a New Deal. Use public finance in order to press into the service of things humanity needs the existing money. When it comes to countries like Argentina and Greece, well, we have a common fate. We have a debt that we can never repay. Never. Never. I mean, even if God and her angels descend upon the planet, and they cannot repay that debt. It cannot be repaid.
Right.
So debt that is not cannot be repaid has to be haircut. Has to be. You know, it's what Wall Street banks do every day. They restructure debt. They cut it. So we need to have debt forgiveness. for countries that cannot repay them. Because, you know, even from a selfish perspective of rich countries, yeah, the only way they can get some money back of what Argentina or Greece owes them is if there is growth. And there can never be any growth. If you have the hedge funds, you have the New York judges, the International Monetary Fund, pressurizing the government of Argentina to continue to squeeze the people of Argentina, right? It's like beating up a sick cow, expecting to get more milk. You're not going to get more milk. The cow will die.
Yes.
It's a clever strategy.
Do you believe that we are already in a post-capitalist world?
I have been known to say that. Yes, this is what my next book is going to be about. I'm already putting out there this view. Look, I'm a lefty, right? Full disclosure.
Yes,
lefty. We lefties were brought to this world thinking, in infinite stupidity, that we came here to overthrow capitalism and to replace it by socialism. And to our consternation, we discovered, or I'm discovering now, that capitalism did it itself. It overthrew itself. And now we have something which is much closer to feudalism. And, you know, my fellow leftists hate me for saying this because they think that, my goodness, you know, if we are not here to overthrow capitalism, what's our purpose in life? And the answer is, to come clean and to accept that now capitalism has been allowed, to a very large extent by the failures of the left, over decades and centuries, to morph into something far more oppressive, far more exploitative, and far more dangerous for the human species. I call it techno-feudalism.
Talk about what you mean by that, techno-feudalism.
Well, okay. Think of what happens the moment you enter Amazon.com. You exit capitalism. You enter something that resembles a feudal fiefdom, because it is a digital world belonging to one man and his algorithm. His algorithm determines what product you are going to see, what product you are not going to see. If you're a seller, how you can sell it, how you cannot sell it, whom you can approach amongst the customers, whom not. Imagine, it is a little bit like walking outside your building now and discovering that the city in which you are, every single building belongs to one person. The air belongs to that person. The pavement belongs to the person. And that person also has the capacity to turn your head to ensure that you see what he wants you to see. That's not capitalism. It's not even monopoly capitalism. It is a digital feudalism, a techno-feudalism. And if you think that already, going back to what we were saying earlier, central bank money has replaced private profits. So profits have been replaced by central bank money, and markets are being in the process of being replaced by digital platforms. If you take profit and markets out of capitalism, you don't have capitalism. You have something I'd call techno-feudalism.
We're going to pause our interview there with former finance minister of Greece, Yanis Varoufakis. For the full interview, head on over to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheDavidPakman Show. All right. I am really, really frustrated with what I'm about to tell you. We have been banned from Facebook's video monetization for 90 days because of anti-vax content. Now, I know all of you are probably saying, wait, David, anti-vax? What on earth are you talking about? You have been following the science on vaccines and explaining the effectiveness of these vaccines. And I know, believe me, but we have been banned from Facebook's monetization for 90 days. And I'm going to explain to you why in a second. Now, the backstory here, of course, is we know that at the flip of a switch, we can lose entire sources of revenue for our program. How do we know that? Because it's happened. Adpocalypse took place in April of 2017. When, as a result of an ad playing on a racist YouTube video that had nothing to do with us, YouTube and advertisers essentially switched off advertising on news and politics content for close to 2 months. We lost 99.98% of our YouTube revenue for nearly 2 months. And that made us realize we've got to diversify. We've got to diversify. That's why we started streaming on Twitch. That's why we started posting all of our content to Facebook instead of just a clip or two a day. Now, about a year ago, we lost monetization for 7 days from Facebook, and we never found out why. We were told, you violated community guidelines. Well, which post? Couldn't find out. What did we say? Couldn't find out. But it was only 7 days, so we just decided to wait it out. But we were told, if this happens again, and it's like, if what happens again? If this happens again, you will lose monetization for 90 days. Now, because we have decided to diversify revenue sources because of what's happened in the past, Facebook has grown to be close to 20% of our revenue. And we have now lost that 20% for 3 months. What is the post that caused this? I will show it to you. We covered early last week the conflict between Alex Jones and Donald Trump. Donald Trump now has been advocating more publicly for the vaccine. Alex Jones is anti-vaccine and turned on Donald Trump. So we posted, is this where Trump's base is going to draw the line? And we linked to our video. Alex Jones loses it on Trump. Jones against vaccine, Trump pro. This is creating a rift. And of course, the things Alex Jones said in the video, gene therapies, killing people, we said all of these things are lies. That got us banned from Facebook monetization for 90 days. 90 days. This is close to 20% of our revenue now. And of course, it is a complete and total misunderstanding. We aren't anti-vax. Now, I know there are people who are going to hear this. I'm imagining the comments on YouTube. David, this is your just desserts. This is what you deserve, David, because you've been cheering for people being canceled from Facebook or YouTube or whatever. No. I hope that some of you are sophisticated enough to understand what is going on here versus what we've talked about in the past. I am 100% respectful of the fact that Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, whoever can establish their terms and conditions for what is allowed on the platform. Facebook is completely right to say, we're not going to allow the spread of COVID disinformation. They still allow it, but they are completely right to say that will be our policy. The problem here isn't that. It's that it's not being applied correctly. We are obviously not an anti-vaccine show. So all the people, oh, but David, you said they're coming for you now. This is what you deserve. No. They're not coming for me for anything we actually did. I respect that Facebook can have and enforce terms and conditions. We just didn't violate them. This is a mistake, and there's no recourse to get it reversed. There's no way to get a hold of anyone at Facebook. So if you actually work or have someone you know that works at Facebook that could help with this, please email info@davidpakman.com. Don't send me a link to a form where I can submit. We've done that. Facebook doesn't respond to any of that stuff. Okay. I've reached out to every, I asked Cenk Uygur, hey, do you have a contact? I asked our YouTube rep. It's like, why? I'm like, listen, I know you work for Google, not Facebook, but do you happen to know anyone at Facebook? If you actually work there or know someone who might be able to help, but there is every indication that for 3 months, we are losing 20% of our revenue. And I know some of you will say, screw Facebook. We don't need it. If we don't work to have our content there, we are giving more space to the actual right-wing disinformation that spreads uncontrolled on Facebook. So I know it's easy to say, just get off the platform. The platform is huge, and we are on there to try to fight the trash that is spread like wildfire on Facebook. So all I can ask you is help us make up for that 20% we're going to lose for 3 months. Grab a membership on my website. That's really the one ask I have. 20% for 3 months is that's a big chunk. You know, we've got a number of employees now and a lot of different things that we're doing, and 20% is a big deal. We've created a coupon code. It's kind of a joke. It's Facebook with two F's. You know, F Facebook. Okay, yeah, it's a joke. Okay, But you can go to joinpacman.com, use the code FFacebook. You'll get a discount, and hopefully we can make up a little bit of this lost 20%. But an absolutely devastating thing. And I'll keep people posted about it. Urine therapy, urine. Yes, urine, the bodily fluid urine. Christopher Keyes, who is another one of these COVID conspiracists, he's an anti-vax leader of sorts. He is now urging followers to drink their own urine to fight COVID. Let's take a look at the clip. This is quite vile and also incredibly stupid. Take a look at this.
The antidote that we've seen now, and we have tons and tons of research, is urine therapy.
That's right, folks. You are not. Don't adjust your television. He is saying urine. U-R-I-N-E.
Okay. And I know to a lot of you, this sounds crazy.
Right.
But guys, God's given us everything we need. Okay. And I'm going to give you again, I test and prove all things. Okay. This has been around for centuries. We've got research after research, documented, peer-reviewed, published papers on urine.
Now, it is true that there are peer-reviewed, published papers about urine. It's not about urine curing COVID. Now, understand that there's a backstory to this. There's a backstory to all of these ideas. There's a recycling of old ideas going on. Urine has been promoted in the past for treating cancer. Cancer Society says there's no evidence of therapeutic use of urine. People talk about irrigating your sinuses with a neti pot. Some people use distilled filtered water for the neti pot. There's the idea of using urine, running urine through your sinuses, brushing your teeth with urine. That's an interesting one. Applying urine directly to the skin for some kind of skin treatment. The source of all of this is a simple idea that there are certain tumor proteins present in the urine of cancer patients. And the idea came from if you introduce urine into the body in different ways, then the body will start to make antibodies against the tumor proteins and it might destroy the cancer or have other benefits. It's all bogus. It's true that urine can contain tumor antigens. There's no evidence that shows that drinking it, using it for massages, using it to bake a cake, bathing in it, or any other urine applications actually does any of the things that it's claimed to do. Now, I want to be thorough here. When we talk about urine, we need to be thorough. There is one possible bridge use of urine for health purposes. Okay, now, does anybody know what it is? If you are completely dehydrated and without water and you're on the verge of dying, urine is 95% water. There is some belief that for the very short term, you might be able to survive at a point of catastrophic dehydration by drinking your urine for a day or maybe two, okay? Urine, in a general sense, it's 95% water. It's safe to drink. It will replenish some lost water. The problem is that that other 5% that's not water isn't stuff you want a lot of in your body. You're basically taking the stuff your kidneys have filtered out and you're putting it back in, and it'll end up back in your kidneys, and you can end up with really, really bad symptoms from long-term drinking of urine. But if you're in a completely desperate situation, no water, you're close to death, it's conceivable that drinking your own urine might let you survive just a little bit until you get rescued or whatever. There's actually the book 437 Days about the fisherman Salvador Alvarenga, who drifted offshore in Mexico, ended up in the Pacific Islands. At some brief periods, he drank his own urine, but he very quickly figured out how to collect rainwater. He would not have been able to survive just drinking urine for 437 days. So that's the truth about so-called urine therapy. Christopher Keyes, dangerous conspiracist not to be followed. We have a voicemail number. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. Here is a mind-blowing voicemail with a hypothesis about how I didn't get COVID, but my girlfriend did, as I talked about last week. I don't know that anything in this voicemail is based in science, but it is an entertaining hypothesis. Let's listen to it together.
Hey, David, I listened to your show on your girlfriend with the COVID exposure, and I have a possible solution for you. It wasn't an issue of her infecting you. It was an issue of you infecting her.
Okay.
Your brother and you share the same genetics. In all probability, you picked it up from your brother. What I'm finding here around me is that people that have got high levels of protection are still picking up the virus, and they can still extrude virus in microdoses, essentially, is how to think about it.
Extrusion of microdoses. Wow.
But they're not producing enough for the viral protein to trigger the COVID tests. So in your situation where your girlfriend seemed better than worse type of situation, what I think happened was your brother infected you guys when you were in the car. When you went home, her genetics responded her way. Your protection and genetics responded its way. And since your brother and you obviously share the same.
So all of this is absolutely fascinating and entertaining. I don't know that there's anything here based in science. So like one idea, first of all, the idea that it's my brother who was the exposure point. My brother tested after this. It doesn't seem like he had COVID. It doesn't seem like he had it, nor that he got it. The other thing is, I don't know that there's any evidence that if you're exposed by someone with whom you share genetic material, like a brother, that you're less likely to get it from them than an exposure from a person with whom you don't share genetic material. It's endlessly entertaining. I just don't know that there's any facts here.
It's very similar. So during that time frame, you were sick. You weren't sick enough to actually produce enough protein to trigger the positive test. She was.
Remember, the test is looking at viral RNA, not viral protein, as we talked about yesterday. So there's some question marks here about this explanation.
Reacting to that, because you guys both work from home and you're both in such a closed space and you're living as a couple, you essentially were microdosing her on a regular basis. So it was a situation of very little over a long period of time. That's why she had her ups and downs.
It's fascinating. I don't know that there's anything there that's actually backed by science, but a fascinating, fascinating explanation. On today's bonus show, the U.S.-Russia talks have ended and no progress has been made. We will also talk about the first ever heart transplant from a genetically edited pig. Fascinating. And John Ossoff will introduce a bill banning members of Congress from trading individual stocks. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
WRCT in sound from way out.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Thank you. folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet, because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I believe the threat to our democracy is so grave that we must find a way to pass these voting rights bills. Debate them. Vote. Let the majority prevail. And if that bare minimum is blocked, we have no option but to change the Senate rules, including getting rid of the filibuster for this.
In a major speech in Atlanta, President Biden's endorsed changing the filibuster rules to help Senate Democrats pass major voting rights legislation. We'll speak to two leaders in the voting rights movement, one who boycotted Biden's address and one who attended. Then we go to the Bronx, where 17 people, including 8 children, have died in a massive fire in an apartment building. The city's blaming the fire on a space heater. But housing advocates say the real issue is the lack of safe, affordable public housing.
As an organizer in the Southwest Bronx for the last 8 years and working with thousands of tenants over countless buildings who have all experienced these issues, as well as not having heat or getting repairs, being harassed, living without gas, I have to say that I'm really shocked and astonished that the city leadership would blame tenants.
And we'll look at a fight in New Jersey to stop a new gas-fired power plant in Newark.
A year after passing the strongest environmental justice law in the country, Governor Murphy's betraying our communities that he swore to protect black and brown people. He's trying to put a fourth fossil fuel power plant in our neighborhood. Despite trying to fight climate change and environmental racism, Governor Murphy is breaking his promises to our communities.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden's publicly endorsed changing Senate rules to prevent Republicans from using the filibuster to block voting rights legislation. Biden spoke Tuesday in Atlanta, Georgia.
To protect our democracy, I support changing the Senate rules, whichever way they need to be changed, to prevent a minority of senators from blocking action on voting rights. When it comes to protecting majority rule in America, the majority should rule in the United States Senate.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is expected to introduce proposals to change the filibuster rules as early as today in an effort to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act and the Freedom to Vote Act. But it remains unclear if Democrats will have enough votes due to possible opposition from Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. A number of voting rights groups in Georgia boycotted Biden's speech, saying they needed concrete action, not a, quote, photo op. We'll speak to two prominent voting rights leaders after headlines, one who attended Biden's speech and one who refused. As the record-breaking Omicron-fueled COVID surge continues, the acting commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, Janet Woodcock, told lawmakers most people will get COVID-19. Woodcock said the focus should be on making sure hospitals and other essential services can still function. U.S. daily cases are now averaging over 760,000 with record hospitalizations. Here in New York City, students staged walkouts Tuesday to protest COVID protocols and learning conditions. The protest included hundreds of